Writers and poets have for centuries been inspired by the wonders of the sky. But back on Earth, what kind of books manage to inspire an astronomer? It's that time of week when we talk books, and my guest is Dr. Alan Duffy, an astronomer and researcher at Swinburne University in Melbourne. Good morning, Alan, and welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
We've invited you to talk books this morning. I know you've selected three titles for us, and they sound amazing. But first, can you tell us, what do you look for in a good book?
Something that I can escape in. It just has to be, it can be ancient Rome, it can be science fiction, whatever it is, it just takes me away from my head up in the clouds, up in the sky, as it usually finds itself, and takes me back to a different story or a different experience. And you get to live an entirely different life in some of these books. And really, it's that encompassing and captivating narrative is usually what captures me.
I find it fascinating. Most people look to the sky to escape, and your idea of escapism is clearly terrestrial.
Yeah, that's right. Look, if you spend your life looking up, sometimes it's good to look down too.
Okay, well, let's start with the first title in your selection, Seven Eves. Eve as in The Wife of Adam by Neal Stephenson. What's it about?
This is a massive book. It starts off, as a lot of sci-fi does, with the world ending. And in this case, something happens to the moon, it breaks apart, and it begins to rain down chunks of meteors or the remains of the moon, and basically destroys the surface of the Earth. And it's all about humanity's attempts to escape that fate. It goes into wonderful amounts of detail about space travel and the way in which you could try to live in space. And then it gets a bit interesting, because you end up, spoiler alert, having seven survivors, seven mothers, who all have very different views about what caused our collapse and how we couldn't work together at the very end to survive. And they decide that they, through genetic engineering, will select one key trait that they feel represents our best way to survive, and that can be strength, it can be leadership, it can be even paranoia. That can be a strength in the sense you can assess the dangers ahead. So they all have very different views, and you end up with the human races, and that's the rest of the book ends up exploring how humanity begins to rebuild the world, but in doing so has also become so different to what we would recognize, and become seven very different races. And just the scope and scale of this book is humbling, and really Neal Stephenson's a fantastic author and manages to continue that plot over 1,000 or 2,000 years.
It's not shy of big ideas, is it? I mean, the first line is, the moon blew up without warning and for no apparent reason. And I also want to ask you, it's not often in sci-fi that you come across a story where women are determining the future of the human race.
Yes, I have to say, I did love that about this book. Very often we have, there's some heroic man, Captain Kirk, or, sort of Luke Skywalker style in Star Wars. And here it's the women make the calls. It's the idea of creation and the idea of the incredible investment in having a child and in raising a child. And how much more important that is when there really are just seven women left, and we have the entire future of humanity based on those children. And that's a key moment in the book, actually, when the male characters recognize that at some level, blokes are superfluous, especially when you get to the end, and it's all about trying to continue the human race. And you realize that for the most part, blokes, we can help out, but at the end of the day, it really is up to women to have those children. That's not going to change in any sort of real sense in centuries worth of technology to come. So this is the idea of the story, and our heroines are incredibly strong and varied, and that for me was a real thrill, actually, to have such a change in the usual dynamic of a book.
It's so refreshing when sci-fi tries different things instead of sticking with the, robots and monsters and stuff. Let's move to the second book you chose. We move from sci-fi to anthropology, and to a book written by the renowned American scientist and author Jared Diamond, who's of course best known for Guns, Germs and Steel. His new book is called The World Until Yesterday. What do we learn from this book?
So this is a book that I love the premise of, which is all of the thousands of civilizations and peoples that have existed on the Earth all represent different attempts to build society or to understand the world around us, and including our own interactions. They all have different takes, and it would be very foolish to think that this Western model that we have, although successful in terms of colonizing or dominating the world, is the only way, and indeed the best way, that you can live. And so he looks at a number of examples, in particular Papua New Guinea, which was relatively isolated until quite recently in modern times, to see how they live, how do their parenting styles differ from the West, and is this a good thing, bad thing? He doesn't really want to make that call, but he presents the positives and also the negatives of a lot of these different societies, and really asks us that question: could we do better? Could we look after our children in a different way? There's a big theme of shared parenting in a lot of these other cultural groups that he discusses, and that for me was quite strong, because I do worry that we have there's a couple of parents, even the extended family is becoming a bit less of a sort of normal upbringing for children. And I grew up in an Irish family, huge, number of relatives, and all the kids in my street I knew. We play sports together and football. That kind of experience, I worry, is maybe changing. And he really harkens back to how you can get, you can learn a lot from these different peoples, and including what we do with our elderly rather than lock them away in these homes. A lot of societies have elders as a cherished resource and a font of wisdom in that sense. So he asks some very difficult questions of the West, and he presents it in a very readable fashion. Probably the scale of it escapes him a little bit. I think it's, it's a massive ask, and it doesn't always work. But my goodness, when he tells some stories, well, he's nothing if not a great storyteller. And you can really learn a lot about the fact that our one Western model isn't necessarily the only or the best way to live your life.
Mm. And you're actually not the first book reviewer we've had in recent weeks to mention a book based in Papua New Guinea. I'm tipping that 2016 is the year of stories from PNG. And your final choice of books makes us travel to ancient Rome. It's called SPQR by Mary Beard. What does SPQR stand for those who didn't grow up with Asterix comics? And and what's the book about?
Yeah, so I did grow up with Asterix comics, and it's Senatus Populus Quae Romanus, or the Roman Senate and People. And it's what would be tattooed onto the legionnaires. It was the acronym for Rome, the Roman Empire. And really, it's a fantastically well-written book. Mary Beard is incredibly amusing. Focuses on what set Rome apart. Why did this actually, at the time, relatively poorly connected as well, little village, what set it apart that it eventually conquered the Mediterranean and indeed further afield? So there's a couple of lessons you learn, but what I find most fascinating was you hear the writers of the time discussing issues like citizenship and dual nationals, and whether you can, what it means to be Roman when you have such a global, and those times, global connectedness, and the do you welcome people in and their customs and give them Roman citizenship, which at the time was unheard of. You were the citizen of wherever your city or town was. Rome had a different idea. And it's the idea that we are now grappling with ourselves. To what level do you have executions? And Cicero famously executed a sort of domestic terrorist at some level without trial, and was later was essentially exiled as a result of this later on. That idea of protecting your city, your people, your country, at whatever cost, that's something we grapple with, I think, to this very day. And it's just incredible to think 2,000 some years ago, ancient Rome, amidst the Colosseums, were dealing with issues of citizenship and terrorism in the same way that we're trying to discuss ourselves. Mm. And that for me was a really humbling and I guess, connection that I wasn't expecting. I didn't know anything about that in Rome. I've always loved ancient Rome. And as you said, the Asterix comics, maybe started that one off. But for me, it became more about more than just the architecture and the Russell Crowe style gladiator battles, and more about just how normal people got on with their lives, but big questions about the nation and the way you would protect it that we still grapple with today were being discussed in ways that you can relate to. And quite frankly, that was not something I was expecting from this book, and it was a fantastic read.
Because we do tend to sort of, genuflect to the Roman Empire quite a bit when we look at history, don't we? Like we love its laws and its approach to conquering different countries, the systems it put in place. But there were real questions too about newborn babies thrown away on rubbish heaps, child brides, and those sorts of things. Just briefly.
Yeah, absolutely. Rome, in a lot of ways, looks like a Western world with laws and with issues of citizenship. But then, on the other hand, it's this entire monstrosity where babies were killed, slaves were crucified. I mean, it's this weird juxtaposition of some of what we hold dear in the West and some things that nauseate us, and yet it's all done in a familiarity and a setting that we recognize from so many films. Mm. So I think Rome will continue to hold on to our imaginations and captivate us for many years to come. And look, if it's always written about as well as Mary Beard does, then it will certainly have a place on my bookshelves for many years to come.
Alan Duffy, thank you for talking books with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Alan Duffy is an astronomer with Swinburne University in Melbourne.